discussing the ideas, the challenges, and the technology of the crypto economy. This is a Crypto Economy Chat. What is up, Crypto Economy crew? Welcome back to the show. This is The Crypto Economy with Guy Swan, and we have got a chat today with the awesome guys. I got to sit down with the Friends Against Government podcast. I was actually on the show with Karin Bird almost exactly a year ago, which is pretty amazing, and we were just talking about all that's happened with Bitcoin and Lightning in that time, what we've both been up to, and then, you know, just kind of reminisced about what it's like after a year and some change of keeping our podcast going strong. And I had a really busy last week too, so it was actually really great to get down and just chill, drink a little bit, and relax with these guys to talk about what a crazy ride it's been. So before we jump into it, I was just checking my eToro app for the price, and it looks like despite some crazy wicks to the upside and downside, we've not really moved a whole lot. Still sitting right around the mid-9400s. And honestly, the longer I think we sit at the bottom of this support zone, the more likely we're going to have another leg down. So I am still in sit-and-wait stage. Let me know what you think. Shoot me a tweet at The Crypto Economy, or if you're in the Crypto Economy Crew Telegram group, just drop your prediction in there for what you think, you know, next couple of weeks have in store for Bitcoin. Don't forget, I will put a link to eToro in the show notes today, as well as in the Twitter post, so you can set up your own account and start exploring the eToro platform. All right, so let's jump into this. It was really fun. Thanks, Karin Bird, guys, obviously, for having me on the show again. We'll have to do it again. Maybe on the next anniversary, we'll see. But I'm going to leave the Friends Against Government intro song in this because it's just amazing and everyone deserves to hear it. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump in.
Sometimes you might feel trapped between the right and the left. No one listens when you say taxation is theft.
But there's a place where people know harsh government brings tears. So grab some blue and adrenochrome. Let's make the timeline weird. Friends Against Government. Friends Against Government.
Okay. Well, then to kick it off, first of all, let's thanks a bunch, Guy, from the Crypto Economy podcast for coming back on. Guy, how's it going, man?
It is going great. I'm happy to relax a little bit. I've been working and now I get to chat with Karin Bird. That's still too awesome that like we're almost exactly a year. I had no idea. I forget how long both of us have been doing this now.
Yeah,
yeah, man. Yeah, no joke. And I think I was thinking about it. I was like, you know, the price of Bitcoin when we had you on last time was right around where it is now, except the elevator was on its way down, and now the elevator's on its way back up.
So. Oh man,
it really was. It really was. Wasn't it? Somewhere like 11K or something.
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, I don't remember exactly, but it was probably between 8 and 12 somewhere, and wow. It was just, you know, rattling its way down. So thank God it looks like the bottom's in and we're going back up out of this.
Oh, back into bull market.
That's a good observation, yeah. Carr. I wouldn't have thought of that, but that puts things into perspective, actually.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. It's pretty wild. It's been a wild year. One of the bigger things has really just been the more like retail implementation of the Lightning Network. And just people getting Lightning nodes up. And that's been something that's really cool since the last time we've had you on. I mean, people had Lightning nodes last time. You may have had one. I didn't. But I think it was after like Pierre launched that node or published the node launcher that really got a shitload of people to get up and running.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually still have not used Pierre's node launcher.
Oh, really?
And I even took his Lightning workshop, programming Lightning workshop, which was really good. But Yeah, it was. I'm not 100% sure if I had my node up this time last. No, it was June. Yeah, okay. I was probably playing around with my first node at that point. And it has come a very long way. It's been kind of crazy to see how quickly, like there'll be these periods where I'll be like, okay, like I'm kind of like these little incremental updates, you know, and we'll get like a period of like every 2 or 3 weeks we get these little increment updates and it feels like nothing changed. And then like something drops and you just realize how much it changed, like just in the ease of use and stuff. And the big one that I can't get over recently, I'm not sure if you listened to this episode, but it was an interview with Roy Scheinfeld from the Breeze Wallet. And like conceptually, he and a number of other people are kind of pioneering the idea of a Lightning service provider where you connect to a node specifically as like they develop their own wallet. And they're trying to say, they're trying to prove to you that, you know, use our wallet and we'll be your Lightning service provider. We'll make sure there's always a route available. There's always liquidity available. And you basically use like our all-encompassing thing and it's non-custodial. They open a channel with you. So you still have the keys. They never have control of your funds. But they are the default LSP. And obviously you can pick a new one if you want. I mean, there's no limits. There's no geographical limits. It's not like you have to pick between Time Warner and Charter or whatever. Like you have two options. Like you can pick anyone anywhere in the world. You just connect to the node.
Right. Or no one at all.
Or no one at all. Or you just pick a random node. It makes no difference. But obviously you want to connect to a node that's to some degree reliable. So you're connected to a solid portion of the network.
Yeah, that's
fascinating. They came out with that wallet. And one of the things that they do is they actually open a 1 million Satoshi node channel with you the second you set up your wallet.
Oh.
Like they don't wait for you to fund. They don't wait for anything. They immediately give you a 1 million Satoshi, which is like $100, channel. And then you just have those funds available. Somebody can send you $100 through the channel. And you can fund through that channel.
Right.
And it's crazy. It's been really, when that happened, because it's a completely zero configuration wallet and there hadn't been that to date. Like every single one of them, you had to know what a channel was. You had to know what was going on. And this one, they give you an address. And when you send the money in, there's a new service called Loop In, which is basically an atomic swap between like Bitcoin and Lightning.
Yeah.
So you're just sending it to a Loop In exchange automatically. And what's happening is like I send $90 in Bitcoin to this wallet and then they just fund it with a Lightning transaction.
Damn.
And so I just have it in my wallet. I just have a balance. I can go see the channels if I want. I can open up the advanced view and do all the crazy stuff. But as a normal user, all I see is that I have a balance. I have a wallet and this is what I can spend. This is what I can receive.
Damn, that's awesome. I've said that before. I mean, not like it's revolutionary, but just that is like the final piece of the puzzle is getting the user interface, the liquidity available, and so on and so forth with Lightning to solve the cup of coffee problem and also elevate the privacy features. It's just the last two points of contention on the Bitcoin protocol, and once those are solved, man, it's like, why would you use anything else?
Yeah, it really is. That's like a huge step, and to think that all of this stuff, like that app, is in beta, the Lightning Network is still in beta, everything is still, like we have not like come to fruition with this at all. But what we can see how these tools will behave, we're already getting like, you know, reflections of that we're going to see in the future.
Yeah.
And it's really awesome. I've been super excited about the Lightning Network and I've been using it more and more just because it's easier. It just is. The payments work.
What do you use this wallet?
Breeze? Yeah. Since it came out, I actually had a guy at one of the meetups, show it to me and I've been using it ever since.
Cool. I got to check that out.
It's Breez.
Okay.
And I've used it for like, I don't know, all my early wallets for Lightning I always eventually had like a failed payment. And I've used this one probably for like, I don't know, 12 payments or something so far. And I've had nothing fail, and I'm almost scared to like keep using it because my record is so good. I don't want to, it makes me nervous that it like just keeps working. So we'll see. But it's exciting. It's exciting to just have something that I can just go scan a thing and then it's like, check. And it's just done. It's done. It's done. And I know I can see the advanced and see how it works. I know I have my keys. Like Breeze is not taking my money. Like they don't even know where my payment is being sent to. They're not routing for me. Nothing. It's just awesome.
That's cool. Yeah. I think the first thing I did when I got my Lightning Node set up, and this was months ago, and frankly, I haven't touched it since. I think I still have it running on that, on my one PC. It runs just kind of in the background. But I think the first thing I did was I sent like one or two Satoshis to your tip me or whatever. On your site just to do it.
You posted that on Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, just to do it. I was like, I just sent one Satoshi for a one Satoshi fee. And I was like, it's crazy.
I'm holding that.
That's the stack and sats, right?
Yep.
It makes the podcast all worth it. So we were talking about this before we started recording. I think your podcast really like took a pretty big step up in the last year since we've had you on last. It's awesome. It's awesome to see.
I agree. I'm super jacked that it seems to be really taking off. It was really surreal at the Bitcoin 2019 conference. I had a number of people come up to me who I've never talked to. I don't know. And they're like, whoa, what's up, guy? I love your podcast. And I was like, who the fuck are you? You know me? You know, like, and the listens have been great. I've had steady growth in this last month. I think I'm going to have, again, I think I'm going to break my all-time high. And I don't know. It's been also, I think another thing is I've seen like two or three people try to copy the idea of like reading for like a podcast, like an Audible podcast type thing.
I was thinking about jacking that idea from you, to be honest.
Do what?
I was thinking about doing that exact thing, but with non-Bitcoin, like other stuff I would want. I was like, that is a really good idea that you do that.
It seemed like it was something that I had wanted for so long, and I was just like, why didn't I just do it, right?
Right.
And what's funny, though, is that like I've seen like three or like, no, I guess it's two. Two specifically in the Bitcoin space that have tried to copy it, and I guess they just died out. One of them was I heard it, I think. Something like that. I don't know, but it was Bitcoin articles. I guess they only did it like once every 2 weeks or something.
Did you send
like
them some hate mail? Right. Did you discourage them along the way?
No, I actually promoted it.
No, that was me, Carl.
I don't own this idea. It's the most basic idea ever. Like, I'm not going to make a patent on reading other people's stuff. It's like, what a great
guy
idea.
Guy quickly sweeping over his tracks right here.
That wasn't me. That was Bird, I guess.
But yeah.
You can't do it. What you do just once, 2 days a week. You have to. You're like a newsletter. You got to do it every day. You know.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it doesn't matter. It doesn't. It's not news if you don't do it every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know, but people have been listening.
Yeah, man. They sure have. And you're gonna have a tailwind too coming into the next kind of go around here. So that'll be awesome.
I really hope so. It's looking up, and my wife and I have been taking it very seriously. She's my COO, so to speak. Nice. She's the only one that can actually organize and keep things on schedule.
Right.
Oh, nice.
I am much more of a fly by the seat of my pants. If I'm interested in something in front of my computer, maybe I'll record it.
Yeah, that's kind of it seems like on this podcast we don't have a COO.
We have two retards as well.
I can't believe we have a podcast account on Twitter. That's like already a lot.
I can't believe that we both haven't accidentally deleted each other's phone numbers and just lost track of each other.
Yeah, right.
We won't have a show this week because I can't get up with Bird.
Yeah, I don't. Does anybody have his number? Like a year into podcast,
you sent him a letter in the mail,
and I'm waiting for a response.
Yeah. Oh man.
God. But no, man, that's awesome. And it's, and for like, it is a, it's a challenge. Like for anybody that doesn't, that it, not, not that like podcasting is, you know, rocket science or anything like that, but just to like stay motivated and to kind of push through the inconveniences and the technology failures and like all the bullshit to just consistently get episodes out is, and Bird can probably talk to that more than me because he handles all that shit, but, it's a, you know, it's an accomplishment.
Dude, it definitely is. That's kind of what I found is just that the, that's always my fallback when I'm not getting something done on like kind of the business side or like contacting people like I should or whatever. I'm just like, I just kind of fall back to sitting in front of my microphone and recording and getting episodes out. And that's been both my savior and my fault, I guess you could say, in the sense that it's not seeing a lot of progress elsewhere, but I'm pumping out content like crazy and reading just so much stuff. I've been absolutely flooded with articles lately. Cause now I'm getting people to like my people are sending me stuff.
Right.
Like it's getting like the community is actually starting to get engaged with the show a lot more lately.
Yeah.
That makes the job so much more fun and easier. Right.
Oh, both of those things. Yeah. I'm just getting flooded with shit to read.
Yeah.
And like I'm getting to a point where I'm starting to have to skim a lot of the articles and some of the stuff that I read on the show, I decide five paragraphs in that, okay, I'm going to read this. I don't need to read it in full. I just got to sit down and start recording it. So sometime far more often, more recently than in the past, I even read the article that I'm reading. Like, I just know it's going to be good because I've hit like a couple of key points in and I'm like, oh, this is gold, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny like that. I've just been, I don't know. It's gotten exciting again though. Like there was definitely a trough where I think, who was it that I listened to? Somebody like Jason Stapleton talking about like that first 6 months of like when you're super passionate and you've got all the energy like into your project.
Yeah.
If it doesn't take off during that first 6 months, the vast majority of people just give up after that because you kind of lose your steam and then like then it starts becoming monotonous. And luckily, I think it's more than anything. I did have that trough. I did have that. And I think I dropped to like one or two episodes a week actually during that period.
Your low point, we can mark your like bear market low point as like the date that you came on the Fadcast. Like that was just like a career low.
That was it. He was like, do I really
just given up? I'll just go on this stupid show.
Do I really like Bitcoin anymore?
I fucking hate myself.
Just questioning everything because you went on this shithead show.
We like send you off. We're like, guy, we know it sucked for a while, but it's all uphill. It's all up from here. This was your bottom.
Oh God. But yeah, I definitely went through that trough somewhere around when I joined you guys' shows. I think it was really just that like Bitcoin never ceases to amaze. There's always something fascinating to read or talk about. So, and that was always my only reason for starting the show in the first place was just that was what I wasted all of my time doing.
Oh, so yeah.
If I don't figure out how to make money doing this, I'm doomed for the rest of my life. I'm just screwed. So
you've really put it into perspective for me.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it got a... Wait, when did you start, by the way, Guy? I don't even know if I know that.
It was... Oh, wait, no. My wife actually just found the original start date. It was March... I think it was March 13th, 14th.
Wow, you started... You mean... And in 2018?
Yes.
So oh, my God. That's like started, literally the to the day, probably, when we started.
When we started. Wow.
No kidding, really?
Yeah, well, I didn't
dude,
know that.
I think
yeah,
these libertarian like, podcasts move in waves. Oh my God,
we're podcast buddies.
We are, because there's a wave of new podcasts again that's coming up. And I think there's been one in between when we started and right now. It seems like every once in a while people are like, you know, I have ideas. I'm going to put them on a podcast. But everyone seems to have that at the same time. March 13th might be exactly what Carr says to the day when we released an episode.
No shit.
Yeah.
We're going to have to find that out. We're going to have to find out
researchers,
the exact same day. I'll confirm my side. You confirm your
side. Okay, we'll figure it out. But then we may be podcast twins. Yeah.
I mean,
it was definitely within a week of that. I mean,
Yeah, I just remember that it was March because it was my birthday month, and I turned 31, and I was just like, I've got to do something. Like, I had been sitting on the idea of having a Bitcoin podcast literally for 4 years. I have like 20 recorded lost episodes of previous shows that I thought about doing, one with my brother and I, and I mean, just all kinds of stuff. And I had just failed to put it out there and finally broke down just a couple of days after my birthday. And I was like, okay. And I read my first article from Bitcoin Magazine talking into my iPhone, sitting on the bed in my room.
That's actually how we did our
read it aloud and made an intro and published that the same day.
You are, that is even creepier because that's how we did our first episode too. March 7th, by the way.
March 7th. Yeah, I looked it up.
March 7th. That's my birthday.
Pretty close.
Oh, really? Oh, man, this is getting weird.
March 7th.
Creepy, guys.
Hold on. March 7th is your first as well.
No, he said it was his birthday.
No, that's my birthday.
Oh, that's your birthday. Whoa.
That was the day that I contemplated. I was like, I've got to just do this.
Oh, wow. Jesus, that is, you know, that's some MK Ultra type stuff. I don't know.
Isn't it weird? Isn't it weird at this point? Isn't it weird at this point that it like feels like I would feel like at first you're like, oh my God, we got to get a podcast out this week. We got to get a podcast out this week. Like it's this change. But now I would feel absolutely naked if we weren't doing it.
Yeah.
It's just a part of life.
Yep. That's
it really has just become like my process to, I don't know. It's just like, I'm just looking for the next thing that I think is important to talk about or like cover in the Bitcoin space. And it's just what I do now. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's what a long, strange trip, as they say.
Seriously.
What's going on? Last time we had you on, I think we branched off into some movie talk, into some.
Oh yeah.
Oh shit, that's right. We talked about like Birdemic and shit.
Oh, we talked about Birdemic.
What's been going on in Guy's personal life? Anything fun? Anything non-doxing but fun that we can discuss?
Mostly that, like, I think the big thing, first, the house has been taking, like, we're 2 years into this house and it's still not finished.
Oh, man.
That was the dumbest thing ever.
Wait,
think I was going to remodel a house. Like,
oh,
we remodeled
how
my
started?
Back bathroom.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wait, say again.
That's how that started, is you were going to, I'm going to remodel. And then.
Yeah. And start a podcast.
Oy.
What a great idea.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I've been, I don't know what it is. Contractors are just garbage.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
And we cannot get, and I don't know, me and my wife had a big stink about it like a couple of days ago. Like, why the hell can't we get someone out to work on stuff? And like reliably, like people don't return calls. We go and we have this big meeting for like 2 hours with somebody and then we never get an estimate. I emailed him like 3 times, and I genuinely think that there's this gap between handyman and like I want to remodel all of the first floor that just nobody gives a shit about.
Yeah.
Like if you're just trying to spend, you know, $3,100 or something to like do like a simple remodel or just tile the bathroom or something, nobody wants to do it. Nobody wants to do it. So like we've reverted back to my wife and I are trying to finish it.
Yep.
Because we've had so many failures with contractors. And now like we're in the same, like we're both trying to tackle this business together and then trying to tackle this house because the house is close. It's so close.
Yeah. That's the thing, man. Getting contractors, and not only that, but getting contractors in a hot area like where you are and where I am. It's like, I mean,
it's
good luck. Good luck. And then, but I'm like in the, you know, I'm kind of in the same position because I'm trying to update mine, and the rental side too. And it's like, it's compounded by the fact that I'm not married and I don't have like a roommate. So all of these jobs, like I was trying to put up a gutter the other day, and it's like, it's not a difficult job. Like conceptually at all, or even physically, but the fact that you don't have another person there, like you're like wielding around these 10 feet like sections of like, you know, in, and it's windy here, it looks a nightmare. I just scrapped it. I was like, fuck this.
You realize that when you're on a ladder holding one end of a 10-foot section, you're like, you really just can't do this with one person.
No,
like,
yeah.
What hell was I thinking?
And I am not the type of person that wants to give up like halfway through. So know, it's just, you know,
like, just like a piece shouting. Of shit. I'm like, God, I'm worthless.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So that sounds like you got a lot on your plate to finish that up. But once it's finished, I'm sure it'll be a load off.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be great. And we love our kitchen. That was the first thing we did is and I actually gave the wife the I don't know what's the word, the christening of the smashing of our wall. When we got in, nice. We had like this shitty little galley kitchen that was right next to this big amazing living room, and just completely closed off. There was this little tiny like way into the kitchen and crap cabinet space, crap counter space. And the very first thing we did was I handed her the sledgehammer and told her to go ahead and ruin this wall, and she poked the first hole in the wall.
Hell yes.
And then we tore that out. I tore the whole thing out.
Cool.
So,
nice. I've been thinking about tearing out a few of my walls, but it's mostly in the fleeting moments after an attempted gutter installation, and it's not really strategic at all. It's just
when the stress level gets there that you like have that motivation.
Yeah, you just take out this wall here.
It's 11:30 at night, the worst possible time.
Just
but you're like, this is it. I'm taking this wall out.
A couple of 40s floating around on the ground.
A couple.
Yeah, so that's what that's what's happening in Guy's life. Trying to turn this podcast into something real solid, and the wife and I are going full on. Let's finish this stupid house, otherwise we'll never be able to appreciate it before we get out of here.
So so not only do you now you've got a unique podcast, but other people have tried and haven't been able to do what you do. I mean, you're not going to remain a niche forever. At some point, people are going to be like, I need this podcast in my life. I think you got a good deal, man. I really do.
I hope so. I have been blown away by the number of people who I expected my show and kind of centered my show around the idea of explaining, like reading a article about some particular topic or technology and then explaining it to somebody who doesn't know much, who's new to the Bitcoin space. And I still try to do that on occasion, but I find myself getting caught up in like reading something about, you know, atomic multipath payments in Lightning.
Yeah.
And then I go like really deep and get really excited about like the implications of this and then forget to explain what the hell a Lightning channel is or, you know, just like the real basic stuff. And I've caught a lot of people, like the people that I find out listen to it are people who are really big and have been in this space for a long time. Like the people whose stuff I read, I find to listen to the show, and I'm like, well, shit, like do I direct this toward like all the people who are really familiar? Do I just kind of go back and forth? And I've just kind of done like an amalgamation of one and the other, like right now.
Right.
Yeah. Have you thought about going back? Because I know that you have some great user-friendly or beginner-friendly episodes. Have you ever thought about just having like a, I don't know if you do it with a pinned tweet, but just like having like just if you're new to Bitcoin, go listen to episode 7, then 25, then 47, and then you can resume, like, or something like that.
That is actually exactly my plan at the moment. I'm launching a new landing page for the website, and I'm kind of moving away from, or I've already moved away from posting them as individual WordPress posts because it was such a nightmare and I couldn't get it consistent and actually clean looking. Like it would just take so much time.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had a listener of the show organize like 270 episodes into categories for
me. Damn.
Like I just talked about it on the show one day, like that, like I was having this problem, like categorizing all my shit. And then like 3 days later, he messaged me and was like, by the way, I organized all your shit for you. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And so I'm actually going to direct people like to explore just the whole setup to his thing. Cause it flows better. Like you just got a whole page to just kind of go through categories. And then for the I'm new to Bitcoin, I've got the first chapter of Mastering Bitcoin in audio now. And I think I'm going to direct people to that because I'm trying to finish out that entire book in audio.
Wow.
And then like video accompaniment, essentially. I'm trying to make essentially an online version and or course to go along with Andreas's masterpiece there.
Mm-hmm.
Direct people to the, for that first chapter is a really good introduction to, you know, what the hell is Bitcoin? And then that plus like a bunch of like five or six of the best introduction episodes that I've done on the show, probably.
Cool.
Yeah, that's kind of the plan right now. I haven't really launched it yet. I've just kind of showed it to a bunch of people and to get their thoughts.
Mm. Man. So much more useful than what we do.
Yeah.
What book would we do an audiobook of, Carr? That's God. It brings up an interesting possible conversation about that. Oh man. Or I was thinking like you have the kind of podcast guy where you could just easily do what Carr just suggested. Go back to episode 7. Go back to episode 13. Makes me think, what episodes would we point people to if we had to show people the crash course into what this show is?
We also point them to guys' episodes. We don't point them back to our own.
Yeah, right.
If you were thinking about catching up, actually don't. Just don't, go listen to Crypto Economy and
go listen to like three of these podcasts.
Yeah. Oh, how's y'all's show been going? I haven't kept up with it recently.
Great,
dude.
It's been better than ever. It's insane how this show keeps like attracting new people to listen to. I don't even know how. I think it hit Carr for me. It hit when I was on Reddit, and I went on like best libertarian podcast to listen to because I wanted to listen to other podcasts, and several people suggested our show.
Yeah,
and it was like, oh,
that's awesome.
I don't know any of these names of people who are posting these things. They just decided they liked the show enough without my coercive, you know, without me coercing them into.
I didn't pay them anything.
You're like looking through your list of sock puppet accounts, and you're like, it's not any of my sock puppets. How could this possibly be the case?
It's so weird. Or like that, and like you said, Guy, when you find out people that you like listen to your show, and it's like, very similar thing happens with us, where, I mean, for me, it's just the average person referencing a joke on our show that I don't even follow this person, they don't even follow me, and they're just, like, referencing the road toad, and it's like, Jesus, that is like, we're having an impact, and it's gotta feel, like, we're an entertainment show, but you do an educational service, like, that's gotta feel a different level of humbling or something, right? It's got to feel some kind of way.
I would say there's two things there. Yeah. Is one is like first, I think there's a huge growth in the liberty movement and at Bitcoin in general. I think is
that's
before
true.
We move, a lot of that.
Before you move to the next point, I want to put a pin in that and revisit that whenever you're done because that's something that we need to talk about.
I will note
yes,
it.
Definitely. But then two, everything that I've read, listen to, heard, like I've been doing a lot of trying to get like my hour a day of like how to have a good podcast, is that entertainment trumps everything else.
It's true.
If you're not being entertaining, you're not going to teach anybody shit.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
And that's one thing, honestly, that I worried about is some of the things that fascinated me were really dry pieces. You know, Mises is not an entertaining read.
Yeah.
So that was always like a bit of, as I heard that, I would get like kind of nervous. I would be like, shit, is anybody gonna, like, am I gonna dig myself into a hole where I'm trying to be informative and nobody wants to listen to it because I'm just trying to be informative? So I've been trying to keep that in mind. And that's why I've been dropping out. I'm not sure if either of y'all have listened to it, but the Bitcoin Time Traveler and 21 Lessons Down the Bitcoin Rabbit Hole were the ones that I most recently kind of like really had some fun to play around with. Mm. And I'm thinking, actually, I've been thinking about this recently, and since you contacted me, I'm thinking of redoing, Carr, your article about the Blockade Runner.
Oh, yeah.
And actually doing it with like real story.
Ooh.
Like sound effects.
Like
I really want to get into it because I want something like really that like grabs people.
Yeah,
which is a great lesson.
If there's one thing I can do, it's throw sound effects together on an episode. So let me know, and we could work on that. I do all the commercials, so I would be glad to like throw in spaceship sound effects. And you let me know. We could work on that.
Yes, our Civil War blockade runner will definitely need a spaceship sound effect.
Oh, yeah.
Always meant to be, guys.
Dogs barking, beer cans.
That was the author's true vision. That was Satoshi's true vision.
Oh,
no, that's a really good idea. That'd be awesome. That would be really, really cool to see that come to life.
Yeah. And so that's what I've been trying to push more toward is particularly if I'm trying to hit like a topic that I know is going to be a little bit dry, but I feel like it's really important. I've been trying to figure out what that element is. Like, what's the element of entertainment to everything lately? Like, how do I make it? How do I be like some troll bitches like you guys?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but hey, maybe we can help you out. Maybe we can help you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'd love some tips.
We've got more than our show. We've got too much nonsense. We need to actually offload. This could be good for both of us. We've got too much nonsense. We can like kind of offload some of that to you and then maybe bring our show down to a reasonable level.
Well, okay, maybe not that last one. Maybe not this
Yeah.
We could become
a joint podcast on occasion, and maybe what we can do is I'll read it, and then like the Mystery Science Theater guys, you can
we'll just comment on it
and drop bullshit like the way through the read.
What do they call Statler and Waldorf?
And the Muppets. And then the nodes validate the transaction.
Oh yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. Boo.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, that's any number of possibilities are available in podcasting.
Mm. I think our next podcast is in the bag, guys.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
All right, let's stop right here and take a break and talk about our sponsor, eToro. I know you guys have heard about eToro. eToro has been around for quite a while, and obviously I have been promoting them on the show recently because they are a new sponsor for us. But if you have not tried them out, you really need to. It's a really simple platform and a really great app. I've said it a couple times on the show that it's now really been my go-to because they have candlestick charts, which are my favorite personally. And so now I've been using them just to check what the price is. And they've got, you can trade or buy 14 of the top cryptocurrencies. And they've got over 10 million users now. They're all the way across the globe and just recently opened to US customers. So I've been playing around with this app. And to be honest, I've just been enjoying it. It's kind of fun, and I've been playing around a lot with my virtual account where they just give you fake money so you can do the equivalent of real trades so I can kind of get used to it because I haven't really done any trading since the bear market started, so I'm kind of get back in the swing of things. I want to be there for the bull market again. But if you don't know about eToro, they've got a really interesting kind of social media meets crypto exchange thing going on. You can actually look at the portfolios of the top traders and study their strategies. And then you've got that virtual account to go ahead and start practicing even before you set up, you know, your KYC and fund or anything like that. You can just go ahead and download the app and get started immediately. So don't forget to check the link that is available in the show notes, and I will also have it in the Twitter post. So you can test out their platform and their app and see if you like it as much as I have. So don't forget to click on those links to eToro, and let's jump back into our convo with Carr and Bird from the Friends Against Government podcast.
Let's circle back to that, though.
You remember what it was? I wrote it down just in case. Sometimes we get off on tangents.
I do.
Okay.
But let Bird feel important.
I try to do something. Listen, I have nothing to
add. Actually what I had written down. Let Bird feel important. So actually, Bird, why don't you intro?
So we were talking about the Liberty Movement growing and the Bitcoin space around it growing as well. Is that where you want to go with this, Carr Camput?
Sure, if that's what you had written down.
That's what was written down. Yeah, go ahead, Carr Camput.
This idea, Bird. Well done.
You're welcome, guys. I'm glad I can contribute on this episode. I know nothing about the topic of.
No, but it does feel that way again. There is an excitement, and I don't know to what degree it's just crossover excitement from Bitcoin and as much as you know, you're always trying to like train yourself to like don't focus on the price, just focus on the technology and whatever. But like it has come around, and there's a lot less bad moods on online, so it just makes it a lot more fun in general to be around, because people were getting so pissy like in the winter, and yeah. And so it's tough to decipher exactly how much of it is Bitcoin excitement versus how much of it is like maybe a potentially a bigger libertarian crowd excitement, but then there's a lot of crossover in between, and there should be a lot of crossover in between. So I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think in the greater trend, I think it's just it's people looking for alternatives. Yeah. Like the trust, the foundation of the status quo is crumbling, and people are kind of desperate for anything that gives them a better, like, you know, like when you put your sunglasses on and you're looking at the world from a different perspective, you're like, holy shit, this makes a lot more sense if I just kind of shift a little bit to the left. And that's what I think people are seeing, is they're just looking for a different way to look at things, because the old one is just not paying the dividends anymore. Like,
right.
It's everybody is hateful. It's so shitty. The political atmosphere is disgusting.
That's
who the
awful.
Fuck wants to be a part of that? And over here in Bitcoin, it's just like it's hilarious, because I'm just like, none of that matters. Like,
oh my god!
I'm sitting with Bitcoin, it just feels so arbitrary. Who gives a shit who the next president is? That is not going to change the world in 20 years.
Right.
It's not going to change anything. Who thinks the deficit is going to be any less? Who thinks we're going to stop all the wars? None of that shit's going to change.
Right.
Like,
just want to be like, I do.
Yeah, Bird just taking the contrarian view.
I was going to say, don't we have to do that episode where we argue hard topics?
Yeah.
The deficit will be fixed in 20 years. I believe
politics.
It.
Politics shuffles notes. Actually, does matter.
And I think Bitcoin is a huge part of that too, because it forces people, it gives what's the term, like, you know, everybody has their like Overton window for like what reality, what can exist kind of thing, and
yeah,
like everything else outside of that is just crazy extreme. Yeah. Well, Bitcoin is one of those things that is outside of the Overton window, and it's like screaming, it's like, you can't ignore me. And when people like finally look at it, it usually just like opens that window just a crack.
Yeah.
And they start asking questions like, okay, so normal monetary policy is bad. Like, how could this work kind of thing? Like, what is money? How could something virtual be money? And it kind of starts down this rabbit hole of just opening that window wider and wider.
It was amazing, and to watch the Fed chairman, I think it was, explain.
Oh my God, I know.
How that was like bone chilling, like,
yeah,
not to me, like, I'm like, yeah, but you could see everyone was like, wait, what? You know,
yeah,
it's still the turn.
The discussions that are being had in the open by government officials now are absolutely fascinating to watch. I mean, we've known this is coming, right? I mean, we've known that it's coming, but it's just still one of those things that when it happens, it's kind of like when I graduated college, like, I was working towards that the entire time, but I like barely graduated and I was skating by through most of it. And like, when I actually graduated, it was still like, holy shit, this actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's this in some sense.
Right.
Like, we've been moving towards this forever, but still,
it seems like it's arriving. Like, it seems like it's becoming.
I mean you got the Fed chairman talking about it. It's arrived, right? Like, it has arrived in the mainstream conversation. Oh, once that
and
starts.
not only are they talking about they're talking about it with fear behind.
Oh yeah, it's funny. Mm-hmm. Powell is talking about it like he knows what he's talking about, which is interesting to see. But then you see him explain it to non-economics focused politicians, and they're like, "Oh, my job is at threat." You know,
yes.
My entire history, the reason I went to college, it's under threat. Really,
yeah.
From this fake thing, like they don't view it as real money still, like,
right.
You know, that this virtual thing is going to take down my whole enterprise. It's kind of amazing to see, because nothing has caused that before. Like, no harmless entity has ever caused such fear in a politician's mind as Bitcoin is going to start causing fear.
Yeah, I was watching the one. I don't remember which one it was. Maybe you remember, Guy, but the one where there was a clip where the guy was basically, he didn't come out and say it, but he was basically beating around the bush on, like, how do we stop this thing? And the guy was like, you kind of can't at this point. It might have been the representative from...
You're talking about the congressman is Henry, I believe.
Maybe.
Or Mick Henry.
Maybe.
Or something. But he was basically saying that you, like, we can't kill Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Dude.
He's on, was it CNBC or something like that?
Yeah.
Like that.
Patrick McHenry, there's no capacity to kill Bitcoin.
Oh, yes.
That's an even crazier thing for him to say. There's no capacity to kill Bitcoin. It's more than just you can't kill it. It's we are incapable of even trying.
Yeah.
isn't that amazing that I've been secondary. You guys have been primary in this whole thing. But just to watch it is incredible how just computer programming is a threat to these people. And they know it. And they're scared. And it's, I live for it.
Hashtag learn to code.
Yeah, right. Dude, it's crazy because, you know, in Bitcoin, a year feels like a decade. Mm. But man, it really wasn't that long ago that we were in the middle of the last bear market. And I mean, Bitcoin, I remember where I was the first time I overheard somebody actually say Bitcoin in a public space. And I was, I was in a restaurant when I was back home visiting my folks for Thanksgiving of 17. So not even 2 years ago, you know, whatever it is, 18 months ago. And that was the first time I overheard somebody actually say Bitcoin in a public space in a restaurant.
Jesus.
I remember those moments.
And your ears perked up. And
like I've been in Bitcoin for 7 years.
Yeah.
Almost eight. I actually think 8 years now.
God.
And I remember, I mean, it was nothing. Like it was a explicit place that you went to on the internet to hang out with the five other people who knew about it. Like that's what it felt like. I mean, obviously there were tens of thousands, if not maybe even 100,000 type like people actually in it at that point. It was still actually pretty big because we had passed that first major bubble up to 33.
Yeah.
But it felt like nothing because you would never run into it in the real world. You'd never see it on the news. And I remember those first moments where it was like I mentioned it to somebody like in like an Uber ride or just out in public or something. And then somebody would be like, oh yeah, Bitcoin, I've heard of that. And I'd be like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Somebody in real life. I remember the transition from thinking that this was just this thing that I thought was fascinating and had huge potential that nobody was ever going to pay attention to something that meant something, you know, in the actual public space, like in real life, people knew of it because it refused to die essentially. And I don't know. It's been, we actually talked about this. This was actually the podcast topic last night that we started with. We've started a new podcast called the Raleigh Bitcoin Meetup Podcast. We have a meetup every Monday. And Steve Jeffress is actually kind of heading it off and he's been publishing it. We're on like session six now, but we have like, I don't know, like 12 people that we have. We all sit down with microphones at a table and we just jab about our thoughts on Bitcoin for the last.
Oh, that's amazing.
That is awesome.
It's great. We've absolutely had a blast and we've had so many great discussions, but last night's discussion was actually, what does it mean for Bitcoin to be successful? And we had a bunch of different ranges because that's a subjective measure, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Like who the hell can say what is successful and what isn't? It's just like what you think is its impact or maybe its purpose. And I think we're getting very close to what my consideration of successful is that when the Fed sits down and develops their monetary policy, when they say our options are A, B, and C to, you know, go to negative interest rates or lower interest rates or raise interest rates or whatever it is, that they have to go, but if we do this, it will mean this for Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Is that Bitcoin is a restriction on what they can do, that it makes global influence on monetary policy because it exists and because there's nothing they can do about it. And that's what I think is the, I think it's both the power of Bitcoin and when it is successful, when on a global scale, no one trying to manipulate monetary policy can ignore the fact that Bitcoin exists, and it has to be factored into their discussions.
That's a good
point. And I think we're getting there.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid metric. I mean, we are we're almost there. You're right. We're
damn near there.
Right at the edge.
The fact that they have to defend against it is justification.
I mean, I mean, in the next presidential term, 4 to 5 years, it's there. You can't ignore it at this anymore.
I think it's going to be a topic in the next presidential debate.
Yeah.
Ooh,
I think so too.
Okay.
Like, I think it's going to matter. Like, in who becomes president, like, in this next round, I think they're going to have to talk about what Bitcoin means.
I'm willing to take that bet. That sounds like fun. Well, next presidential debate, Bitcoin comes up, I'll give you $5.
Well, I think what you were saying, just this cycle, anytime this cycle.
Yes, before the next president.
Anytime this cycle Bitcoin comes up, I'll give you $5. I'm not going to kick you.
$5? No, you got to give him $5.
Every time?
You got to give him 5 Bitcoins.
Yeah, I like that better.
The casual bet for $55,000.
I'll give you $5 cold hard cash.
Cold hard cash.
I'm going to be watching those debates like a hog.
Yeah.
I gotta record it.
Yeah. Every time a new Bitcoin topic comes up, even I'll raise the stakes here. Every time a new Bitcoin topic comes up in anything related to the presidency, I'll add $1 on top of the $5 cold hard cash.
I like it. Cold hard fiat cash.
Or a swift kick in the gonads.
Guy, I don't know if you know if our typical negotiating measures to get new followers is that I offer them a punch in the dick first.
Yes, you do.
For them listening to the show. Yes, and then if they turn that down, then I offer them $5 of cold hard cash.
Okay. And I do the reverse, except with kicks.
That's not a bad deal.
And it honestly seems
reasonable. Honestly, most people, I will say, opt for the cash.
It's put me ahead of followers.
I can see how your listener count is growing.
Yes, exactly.
I understand.
This method has put me ahead of Carr Campit in followers. And I will remind everybody, I am, in fact, right at this moment of recording, 10 followers ahead of Carr Campit, despite a group of Marines trying to sabotage me, as well as Chris Spangle also trying to sabotage me. You guys can't touch me. I'm like Bitcoin, you know, you just got to realize that I am a factor.
We have no capacity to limit him.
Somebody tweets at me to unfollow me, I will just respond, you have no capacity to kill me. That'll be good.
So do you think the fun part about this, though, is that so it seemed super disappointing. You know, after Ron Paul in 08 and 12, it seemed like it was so disappointing in 16 to not have that voice there. But this is such an interesting aspect where this election, and I would imagine at a magnified level next election in 2024, and maybe even the midterms, where we're going to have a voice, a strong voice and an energetic voice, and it's not even going to be through a political party.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's crazy.
Although it's going to be very interesting to watch all the politicians who start to latch onto it, whether they believe it or not. It's going to be very interesting to see, as you say, if it has to become a common factor in monetary policy, it will eventually fall into general politics. And that's going to be weird. Right. That's going
to
be strange.
To see him have to pander to it, even though
I was going to say, because I'm more interested in the people, in the politicians who like genuinely believe in it. That's when we know maybe we got a voice somewhere in that, whether you care or not. But
I'm sure that, like, there is no way in hell that the representative who was talking to whatever it was, the Fed chairman, where he was telling him that there was no capacity to stop it. Mm-hmm. There is no way that you can firmly believe that to the point where you would go on national TV and risk your political neck like that, and you are not going home and buying Bitcoin.
Right. Seriously. Oh, you're absolutely correct about that. You're right. That makes a lot of sense. That's true.
You know, I mean, there is going to be a groundswell of politicians that are quietly accumulating Bitcoin maybe even not even saying anything yet because they're not confident. They're not or they're just using it as an insurance policy or whatever. And it doesn't even have to be that many.
Position themselves there right now because it's not acceptable.
Hedge your bet.
That's such a good point. You'll be able to tell who's holding the Bitcoin by even what they portray in the negative. That's kind of interesting. Yeah. Like, that guy, you're right. He can't say that and then also not buy Bitcoin.
No, you would not think. I mean, it wouldn't be logical to have that much confidence and then and then be like, yeah, I don't need to invest in it, though.
Right. You're either going to accumulate Bitcoin or wage full-scale war against it. And I don't. That guy clearly isn't trying to wage full-scale war against it.
So. Right, right. And that's the thing. That's the interesting thing about Bitcoin, the all-or-nature thing, like almost property of it. And I think I went on that our buddies Biting the Bullet podcast talking about it last week or the other day, and they actually asked me the same question: what's the measure of success? And I kind of described it as a little bit of a kamikaze mission. There's enough fuel to get there. There's very little room, in my opinion, over the long haul to occupy anything but an all or nothing position.
Yeah,
it's you either do it or you don't. Right. And here we are. That's really going to push people to the extremes, you know, along the way.
Yeah, I agree. And I think really there's a lot of pushback and there's a lot of people saying, oh, it's only used for drugs and terrorists and all that nonsense.
Like you don't buy drugs with a $20 bill. It's amazing.
I think the only like person in Congress that I know of that like straight out would be like, yeah, let's go to war with Bitcoin and like shoot everybody involved is probably Brad Sherman.
Yeah, that guy.
And he's just total garbage and he's such an idiot. Yeah. But what's hilarious is that he has actually given some of the most amazing arguments for Bitcoin.
Oh, yes. Inadvertently.
Inadvertently.
That's what I'm telling you. When you occupy the negative space, it tells you just as much as you need to know.
But isn't that interesting, though? Like the people that occupy the negative space most negatively are the ones who understand the true power most positively.
It is so weird, right? It's a weird paradox. It's like I think it's because they know that even if they support Bitcoin, they will lose power if they do it. Yeah,
so unless they buy Bitcoin.
Right, which, you're right.
That's a weird thing.
Yeah, which
Sherman waits as long as possible to buy Bitcoin.
What if Brad Sherman listens to the crypto economy?
Or worse, this podcast.
I will gladly accept him and tell him in all the different ways and colors that he is wrong.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Holy shit, this guy has a lot of opinions on stuff. I just Googled him. Jesus.
Yeah, he's...
Don't do that. You're gonna go down a really... You're gonna have a bad day.
God, I'm getting sick. Yeah.
But that's gonna be an interesting like foil to the whole thing going forward is that now there's gonna be this growing elephant in the room, and then eventually it won't be an elephant in the room, it'll just be, you know, an accepted topic of conversation, and this is all going to happen over the next probably 2 to 6 years. I mean, I think that's or 1 to 6 years. I mean, probably this election cycle, Guy and I think would agree on that. And if not this election cycle, probably the midterms and definitely the next presidential election cycle. And people are going to just have to talk about it. And if they have to talk about it, like you said earlier, Guy, with the Overton window, that just inherently shifts the Overton window for anybody who's listening.
Yep.
Here's my thinking is the next happening comes in at March.
Yeah. May, right?
Wait. Hold on. Yes. Can you explain what that is? Can you just.
Okay. In fact, I'm probably going to be covering this in the next couple of days on the show.
Okay.
Is 100 trillion USD, the Plan B account, has kind of pioneered the idea of, or at least assessing and like laying out the idea of the stock to flow ratio as the best measure of Bitcoin's value. And it lines up amazingly well with a bunch of other assets.
I saw that chart. That was wild.
Gold, silver.
I'm already lost, so I hope when you do this episode, you break it down simple for me.
I'll get there. I am going to explain. Uh-huh. The stock to flow ratio is the comparison between how much the stock, how much actually exists now versus how much we're pulling in to increase that stock. Like how much gold mining is there being made in order to increase the amount of gold that exists.
Oh, and Bitcoin and also would be then the mining rather than the protocol you're talking about then?
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. Mining in the protocol is what issues the new Bitcoin.
Right. Okay.
And the halvening, Satoshi, from the very beginning, there has been a schedule, a very strict and completely unavoidable schedule to the issuance of new Bitcoin. And we've issued, we're somewhere around like 18 million Bitcoin in existence right now.
And if I'm not mistaken, it's 21 total.
Yep.
21 million will be the absolute cap.
We're getting there.
We're getting there. And what happens is that every 4 years, the amount being issued gets cut in half. So like every like a block comes every 10 minutes, and think of a block as just like a ledger in this giant book of exchange of transactions.
Sure.
Of who owns Bitcoin. And they come on average every 10 minutes.
Okay.
And after roughly 4 years, it's 210,000 blocks. Hmm. The amount, every single time somebody finds a page, a new page in this ledger, they get to issue 50 new Bitcoin. Hmm. And then at 210,000 blocks, they got to issue 25, or they get rejected from the network. This is the issuance for how you create Bitcoin.
And this is how it's always been.
It's how it's always been.
Okay. All right.
We are now down to 12.5.
Woohoo!
And in less than, it's like 312-ish days or something like that. I can't remember. I haven't checked it in a couple of weeks.
I think it's May 3rd, right? I think it's the estimate.
Somewhere around there right now. And of course, it's just an estimate. It might fluctuate a couple of days. But at that point, it will drop to 6.25 Bitcoin every 10 minutes. And the stock to flow ratio in that period, as the amount of Bitcoin in existence has, you know, remains at like 18 and moving on to 19 million,
sure,
it will start to compare. It's dangerously close right at the halvening to gold's stock to flow ratio.
Oh, is that just a coincidence, or was it designed to be that way?
It's designed to always get to that point at some point.
Oh man, that is frightening, but also really interesting.
Well, hold on, Bird. Were you saying is it a coincidence that it matches gold in this particular halving?
That's what I was. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Like, it was going to probably line up on one of the halvings.
And so that's why it's interesting, because now we'll finally be able to see the comparison between the values. Is what
exactly
you're saying. Like almost precisely.
Yes. Yes.
Ooh.
And the reason the stock to flow ratio is being like, so much attention has been brought to it is because the model fits Bitcoin to 95% of its move so far.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Its crazy entire lifespan. And when that is literally unheard of in the terms of something that is not like gold, the only ones that fit it are typically monetary instruments like those other assets. So 95% for something that is as volatile and is constantly fluctuating.
Right.
You know, when it zooms way past it and then comes back down,
sure,
it's constantly being pulled back to that proper equilibrium.
So like Bitcoin fluctuates on the daily all the time, but like overall, it is going exactly where expected is what you're trying to say?
Exactly, exactly. Oh, it's being pushed pulled back to that stock to flow.
I gotta read books on this shit. I really gotta read books on this shit.
But it's basically... so if that turns out to be a model that continues to work in the future,
sure.
And like it has with gold, we're looking at, you know, 8 trillion, 10 trillion in the next 4 to 6 years. And, that next halving is coming in May, and that's when it's going to match, or get very, very close to gold. And then in 4 years from then, Bitcoin will officially be the hardest monetary asset that's ever existed.
Hardest in what sense? I guess that's the last thing I need to...
Scarcest.
Oh, scarce. Oh,
the most
okay.
sound money. The money that is whose supply is manipulated less
the
than
least.
Any other asset we have ever used as a money in history.
Man. So, okay. So, two questions. One is quick and one is probably one that people scream at one another about. Okay. Mm-hmm. The first one. So, just so I can get this right. The releasing of new bitcoins when it hits that point is going to be almost the same as the amount of gold taken out of the earth is the comparison.
Right, yeah.
Okay,
gold
that was the simple one.
Yes.
The harder one is, does that constant shrink in amount of bitcoins given out or value of bitcoins given out, does that de-incentivize mining? I mean, it would naturally, right?
To some degree, but okay. When you look at like price increases of, you know, 10x, 20x, and then you just have a cut in half of
right.
your mining reward, it's never been a problem in the past.
Okay.
Well, and the other thing, Bird, is that mining is also tied to transaction fees. And so in effect over the long term, miners aren't really over the long term. That is, they're not really supposed to be profiting off of the block subsidy. That's supposed to go away, and then they will be incentivized only by the transaction fees.
Yes, somewhere around like between like 2028 and 2030 is kind of when we expect the transition to happen, where fees with Bitcoin transactions will be the dominant payer, like the dominant reward that miners get. And the block subsidy will just continue to have until 2140, when it will be like 1.3 Satoshi, and then you can't cut it any further.
Oh, is that it? There is, so there's actual final point for the mining. And
there is a point where
And it's asymptotic. So technically there's not going to be 21 million Bitcoins. It's actually like a few Satoshis less.
Yeah, it's like 20,999,000, blah, blah, blah.
Right, so that they can't continue to cut it ad infinitum, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
God, that's really fascinating. that's really fucking crazy, cool, dude. That's really cool. In March?
It's a fascinating system.
Yeah, so the next, like, the next 12 years or so are going to be buck wild.
Yeah.
So do you suspect that... I suppose it's going to only get crazier. Carr, you just implied it's only going to get crazier. And then is it only going to get crazier because of that protocol? Or do you think that more people are going to be interested? And so that's why it's going to get crazier? Or both, I guess. You could probably assume both. Like,
I think it's a feedback.
Yeah. I mean, no, yeah, absolutely. The protocol is going to advance and more people are going to become interested. And then those people are going to start contributing to the protocol. And other things that are tied to the protocol, and then and back and forth and back and forth. I mean, like the internet.
Like the internet.
Yeah, it's a loop. Like, people adopt the internet because of some new thing that they figure out they can do with it, or some new service that they can use, and then it becomes more valuable and it becomes a better network. Like, it's just the general network effect.
Okay.
A network is value to, you know, the square of its users.
Mm-hmm.
So if, like, Facebook is a great idea, but if there's nobody on Facebook, what's it worth?
Right.
Nothing really. It's not a social network if there's no social aspect of it.
Sure. It's not fulfilling the function it was created for. It's just a painting, right? It's just kind of sitting there. Right.
Yeah. And in that same way, like, and that's one of the crazy things about Bitcoin is that it has so many elements to its feedback loop, because there's securing the network, which gets paid in a reward, which, you know, goes up in value as more people, like, get in it. But then the more people who are trying to achieve, like, trying to get that reward out of it, who are mining Bitcoin, means the more secure Bitcoin is, which means the more, the less people can ignore it, because, like, suddenly look at all this computing power that could secure a transaction for me and could make sure that my transaction goes through. And then they get on and they see more value in it, and then the price goes up. And then more people want to mine, more people want to get and build services for it. Like, it's this huge, so many network effects working to make the thing, because as it grows, it gets more secure. That's what's crazy. You think about, like, how many things out there truly do we have where the bigger it gets, the more people we put on it, the stronger it is. Like, when we're talking about, like, a server or something, like, your servers go down when you put 100,000 users on it randomly.
Sure.
Imagine one that the server is more robust and can handle more people pulling information from it, the more people get involved.
I was thinking about that before. It's like the internet and society, like, those are the more people interacting in it is the only way it benefits. Like, it's the only things I can think of are, like, cultural and social things, which Bitcoin is very much going to become a part of the culture. So it's just going to fall in and synchronize really nicely once that happens. That is crazy. That is awesome.
It's going to be a wild ride, man. I think in the next 8 years.
Let me get an over under then. Over under on the first
on
time.
On the wild ride?
I guess you could consider this part of it. Over under on. Bills got to go through the House first, and then they go to the Senate. Over under on the year the Senate considers a bill to just outright attempt to ban Bitcoin. I'm going to go 2026. What do you think? Over under.
I think by the time, if they don't do anything until 2026,
I was about to say, Carr, I already agree with that statement, but, like, I wonder. I do wonder.
I think if you're going to see anything, and I I just don't. I think they're going to try to close the ends of the they're going to try and really crack down on the fiat on ramps and off ramps.
Yeah.
At first. And I think that's going to be their first move. And I think that eventually they're just going to realize it's just
yeah,
you know, water through the fingers. I wouldn't be shocked to see something real soon. I wouldn't be shocked to see them try to push something through in the next year.
Oh, hard under. Okay. All right. I don't think government moves that fast. But yeah. You taking the right over?
Do what?
Did you say you're right on board, guy?
I'm on board with that Ooh. Assessment that if it doesn't happen in the next year and a half, will not be able to do it.
Oh, I don't think they'll be able to do it in the next year and a half. I was just wondering, like, at what point the Senate decides to pick up and say, we got to do something.
Yeah, because at some point you lose so much political capital by attempting. And I think after about a year and a half, I don't know. It's tough to say because, they're going to spin up a bunch of these narratives and there's going to be boneheads that send their Bitcoins to an invalid address and burn them. And they're going to be able to, they're going to parade them out on the news and like all of this. I'm sure they can probably get, I don't know. It's tough to say, but I think I'm with Guy. It sounds like we're kind of on the same page of next year and a half, maybe 2 years. If they don't try and push something big through, but at that point, I don't think it will be effective ultimately, but
no, yeah,
that's the window. That's the political window.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you're right, because it's okay. 1985 to 1990, you could have made an argument. Oh, this internet thing, we should probably get rid of it. Right. But 2019, try and get rid of the internet, not happening.
Right.
So you're absolutely right. There will be a time when the social value of Bitcoin outweighs the social value to remove it from society. Yeah. Which actually,
oh my God,
my son
mows lawns and gets paid in Lightning. I use micropayments to go access data that I need and a million other, because here's the thing with Bitcoin is that it takes nothing to onboard yourself.
Right.
Everybody, at least in this country, which would be the only relevant people when you're talking about a political movement through the House and Senate.
Yes.
Everybody has a fucking computer. Everybody has a phone. Mm-hmm. And so it literally takes nothing to onboard yourself. You download a wallet, write down some seed words, and you don't even really have to do that with some wallets that are custodial. I don't recommend them, obviously, but I'm just saying, just to onboard yourself into the ecosystem, it takes nothing. It's not like when the internet came around, you're like, oh my God, I gotta go buy a computer and like fucking figure out the command line and like all this.
What's a router? What do you mean Wi-Fi?
Everything is already taken care of, and you can basically, as long as you can just get somebody to take 45 seconds to walk you through the fact that like, hey, when you send a payment, you got to wait for it to confirm a little bit. But then again, with Lightning, that's not even the case. So it's, with user interface improvements, the amount of people that are going to onboard themselves in the blink of an eye, relatively speaking, is going to be crazy.
It's going to be like Venmo and Cash App. Yeah, just
It's going to be like Uber.
Just enter your credit card number in and you're in. That's it.
Dude, I was living in DC in 2010 or 11 and 12. I left in 2012 and we were still taking cabs when I was living there. Yeah. And then I don't even really remember when the switch happened, but I don't know that I ever took a cab when I lived in Denver. Like
isn't,
it must have
isn't
happened
that crazy?
But it happened overnight.
You remember having to call the cab the day before? And like, you just had to know when you were going to leave for dinner.
Yeah.
And now you don't need to know 5 minutes before you want to go
somewhere. It's just a blink of an eye. And if you talk about hailing a cab outside of New York, maybe in New York, I don't know.
No, even here, they'd be like, just call an Uber. Why would you?
Yeah, yeah, man. I mean, if you talk about hailing a cab anywhere, if you were just hanging out in Denver and be like, well, I got to walk out to the curb and hail a cab, people would be like, what are you talking about? You madman.
And the best part is with Ubers, like they tried to do here, they'll just try and take them off the road. You can't do that this time. You can't do that with this.
Yep.
Yeah.
Huh. Yep. And it's funny. I remember actually I went to New York for some sort of.
I'm sorry, by the way.
What was it? Wait, what?
Just apologizing for his home city.
Maddie K. Maddie K is in New York right now. during 103-degree, 98% humidity Ooh. Weather.
No, that'll really placate the masses. And,
yeah, and then, Guy, you probably experienced it yesterday, and there were like videos of it in Williamsburg, but even like where I live at, there's like 2 feet of rain on the ground. So shout out to Maddie K. That just reminds me. Yeah, New York kind of sucks.
That's nasty.
It's terrible, dude. It's terrible. But yeah,
yeah, but I went to New York for a job interview, actually. They flew me out to New York, and I remember being so excited. I was like, oh my God, Uber is here, because it was just at the beginning, mm-hmm. and you could only really get it in big cities. Mm-hmm. I used it like while I was there, and I was just like, this is just the coolest thing. And then I remember it was like a week or two later, I was telling somebody about Uber, and I was like, you know, I wonder if they have it around here. And at the time, I was more towards the East Coast in a smaller town. And I looked it up one night, and sure enough, there was Uber available in my area.
Sure.
And that was it. I have not taken a cab since.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it was like a switch.
Mm. Yeah. And so imagine
nowhere to everywhere.
Imagine something that's even easier to onboard people.
It is. You don't even have to wait as long as you do for Uber. You don't have to look at any, like, eventually you won't even have to look at anything. You'll just be able to do it.
Because the infrastructure build-out has already happened. And now it's just kind of putting a little bit of a finer point on the user interface stuff. And then as soon as it hits that critical mass in, you know, whatever society, like, you know, if there's cultural references to it, if nobody you know ever uses PayPal anymore, and they're just like, dude, just download a Lightning wallet. It's just going to be – it's going to be a blink of an eye, relatively speaking.
It's going to be crazy, too, because there's actually just learned of a service like yesterday or the day before called bitflash.club. And it's the beginning of something that I think is going to be a huge part, because obviously the Bitcoin network has limited block space, right? So there's a very limited number of transactions you can actually do on the core of Bitcoin. And that limits how many channels on Lightning you can open up at any one time. But bitflash.club is a great example of something that I think is going to be extremely widespread, is that wallets and services essentially talk to each other. And there's another technology coming soon. There's a BIP for it. There's like an official proposal for it to be implemented into the Bitcoin network called Schnorr Signatures. Oh, Don't laugh at the name, but it's absolutely amazing. It's the ability to aggregate signatures into one. So like normally the amount of space you're taking up to move from, you know, 1,000 addresses of people to 1,000 addresses of new people, you can actually aggregate all of these into a single transaction. And instead of 1,000 different signatures, you sign it once with a joint signature of the whole group. And you're saving enormous amounts of space, and you can actually open hundreds or thousands of channels all at once. So you can onboard people at a huge, huge rate that what has not been possible in the past. And I think how we actually utilize the resource of the Bitcoin network, like the actual data in the chain, is going to change. It's already changing in a big way. And I think it's going to change more and more in the next couple of years. And we're going to figure out we're going to compress so much ownership and so much data into the tiniest packet possible to shove it into Bitcoin. It's going to be incredible. Was it Rusty Russell or Alex? I think it was Alex Bosworth, but he was talking about that in combination with something called Channel Factories, which is multi-party channels. So we won't get into it. But
I was going to say, you're bridging back into topics I don't understand.
I'm going a little bit too deep, but basically he was saying we can onboard millions of users like in a week.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's going to get nuts. Like when we start putting all the pieces, because right now all of these technologies are separate. All these technologies are, here's us testing out Schnorr signatures. Here's us testing out loop in. Here's us testing out a loop out or submarine swaps or like there's all these little technologies all over the place, and they're being used separately. But when we have the development and the software there utilizing all of them at once,
right,
to aggregate all of this and to talk to other people making transactions and to trustlessly pool these things together, it's going to be the experience and the actual operation of this network is going to look almost nothing like what we've been used to up to this point. It's going to be crazy.
Hmm. Man.
Wild.
Wild. It is completely wild. Guy, when are you going to do your getting back into Bitcoin for idiots? That I think I needed that.
Bitcoin for Bird.
Yes.
Bitcoin for Bird.
Please. Oh, man. I was going to say, please name it that.
I'm hoping I have been kind of because I've gone back and forth. I almost released it like 2 weeks ago and then got quite a bit of feedback that I was like, OK, I really need to take this seriously. And I was like, all right, let me pull it back a little bit. So I'm making quite a few changes. And like I said, I've been bad about getting anything other than my regular content done lately.
Right.
But I'm hoping within the next week or two that it's ready to go and actually published. I'll send you a link.
Yes, please.
So that you can dive in when I have it ready.
I got one more question kind of for the audience. Carr, you have any questions or?
No. I was just stoked to get Guy back on, just chat and see, get the update. This is the second annual crypto economy update.
Yeah, we'll have him on next year.
I like it.
we'll see you again soon, Guy. Dun, dun, dun. No. So, okay. So my question is, we have on this podcast a lot of new listeners and a lot of young listeners. I had a few people talking to me the other day, different people over time, young people listening to the show, 17, 18, 19, people who like have part-time jobs and, you know, probably Bitcoin is not the first thing on their mind. And so there's a lot of new people still who listen to this podcast who I want them to start getting into Bitcoin because it's good for the space and it's good for liberty and it's good for all of that. Where would you recommend the newest of newbies go in order to acquire their first Satoshis?
Oh, to acquire their first, like, buy their first
Bitcoin?
That
seems to be, because as Carr says, I wouldn't recommend custodial services. What would you recommend?
I actually would recommend a custodial service right now.
To start off?
Do what?
To start off in the Bitcoin space or just generally?
To start off.
Okay.
Now, you can easily withdraw from this to, like, you know, your average wallet and stuff, but the Cash App. Like, just lets you switch right over, buy Bitcoin.
What?
And just hold it in the Cash App.
Wait.
And that's why when they started doing that, I demand that all of my friends pay me back always in the Cash App.
Wait, Cash App, the Jack Dorsey, the app?
Yep.
What?
Yep. You've been able to buy Bitcoin for like a year and some change.
Are
like
you?
A year and a half.
What? Okay. I did not know that at all. Wow.
Yep. It's really easy. And they actually just instituted withdrawals so that, because they had to make sure they had all their cold storage, all their back end security, like really, really robust.
Hmm.
They would obviously have a nightmare on their hands if they ever had to deal with a hack.
Oh yeah.
And they also open sourced their cold storage policy. I actually read that one on the show. They open sourced it and wrote a blog post about how they do their security on the back end.
Huh.
And I would say if there's anybody to trust with it so far, they have a hell of a setup.
Okay.
So I would definitely recommend that.
If you're brand new, Cash App or some sort of custodial service, if you're brand new, and then eventually I guess we'll point them over to your podcast and to several books where they can learn how to open up their own nodes and mine and all that good stuff. But that is 201. I'm still in 101.
And I would also say, and in fact, this is something that really kind of today's show is a lot about, is about the dichotomy between the Austrian School of Economics and the Keynesian School. And the idea, we have this default idea that spending is good for the economy, and we've demonized savings. And there's this very clear, like, savings are actually the only way to, it's how you save resources for the future. Like, it's how you actually build a better future than one today. We are wasting resources by incentivizing spending. And it's important to realize that there's actually a crap money, like a bad fiat money, versus like a hard or sound money, one that's secure and is hard to counterfeit or cheat or manipulate, is really a savings technology more than anything else. It means that if you put money in it over a long time span, you are very unlikely to lose any value. Absolutely. In fact, you are likely to gain it. And I think that's one of the big things that people, when they buy a little bit of Bitcoin, they kind of forget about it. And then they come back to like their Cash App or something. Like, for instance, about 4 or 5 months ago, I bought like somebody paid me back for like a, I think it was a concert ticket. And so I had like $55 in there and I bought Bitcoin and then just kind of forgot about it because that's what I do. I just hold it as long as I can. And then you go check the other day and during a dip after the price run, I've got $202 in it.
Yeah.
And for somebody who is first in it, like savings is a terrible investment right now. If you're saving in dollars, you don't get paid any interest. There is no way to make money off of it. Like savings is just, it's so worthless. Like as a thing, it's easier to just go into debt. And the incredible imbalances that we have from that, Bitcoin is completely turning that on its head because it's kind of the escape valve for all of that crap monetary policy.
Right.
Yeah.
And it makes people go like, you know, obviously savings is not a bad thing. I'm clearly better off if I have $5,000 in savings than if I am $1,000 in debt. And if a tire blows out, I'm screwed for the next 6 months because I got to catch up.
Right.
You know, like that is not a good situation for me. How could it possibly be a good situation for the society as a whole? And it makes people stop and ask.
Right.
And I think that is one of the most powerful things about it is just that it doesn't, it loses value for like a week and then fires right back up. Like that's just kind of its process.
Yeah, that scares a lot of people too when they first get into it. I remember early on I was terrified. One day I put like $100. It was like, oh, now it's down to 12. It's like, you know. That is a scary
during those hype bubbles, that's the big problem is that people don't notice it until it's so overhyped and overblown that we're crazy overdue for a correction.
Right.
You know, it's gone up 1,000, 2,000% in a period of 6 months.
Right.
And then everybody's hearing about it.
Right. Right. Right.
But yeah, it's definitely a powerful thing
gotcha.
To see your money grow in value though.
Oh yeah. Well, there you go, the Bitcoin podcast.
Yeah.
Carr, how are you feeling about that one? You got the itch out?
Swing back by in July of 2020 for the next one, for episode 3.
I'll be here.
And by then, Bitcoin will either be $2 or $200 million.
Dude, who knows?
Well, we should potentially increase the frequency of the show, particularly with the... I mean, it'll just be fun to track a lot of the political reactions, though
yes.
we don't truly care about them like in any important sense. It is still fun as shit.
I'm into it. Yeah. That's where the bridge comes for me. I love watching politicians squirm. Oh man, that I can't get it out of my head. His face when he's explaining it. Mouth was wide open.
It's very refreshing.
He was terrified.
Very refreshing.
It is. Yeah, man. It's great to be able to terrorize politicians. Oh, man.
Yeah. So, everybody go check out the Crypto Economy Podcast. Guy, you want to take away any other plugs and stuff like that?
Just the Crypto Economy Podcast. Come check it out. I'm Guy Swan. And my new tagline here is that I am the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know.
That's probably true.
Yeah, I've been hearing that on the show.
It's funny. It was kind of like a joke, but I've been thinking about it recently. I was like, it's probably fucking true.
It might be true, dude.
You are definitely the person who has read out loud the most things.
Yeah. I've got a real proof of work there.
You do.
Yeah. I say you can make that claim, and anybody else who wants to make the claim has to provide substantial evidence that you
I would love to be challenged on that.
Yeah.
That would be fascinating. Even if I lost, totally fine. I would just love to be challenged.
And speaking of Bitcoin and beginners, I just went on the Biting the Bullet podcast, which is friends of ours. They run an awesome show. They're Marine vets and did an episode with them on Bitcoin. That was really like beginner and entry level. So anybody who's interested in that. I think it was episode 11 or something like that, but you can read the description and easily find it. And
I have got one very exciting thing for our listeners, which Jake of Tasting Anarchy reminded me about, you may recall. Okay. So I'm going to read his exact instructions here so I don't misquote him, anything like that. This will be a fun
thing. I think I know what you're going to talk about, and I totally forgot about it. That's why he texted you, because he knew I would forget.
I wrote it down in my episode notes
just to
be sure. Okay, here we go. Let me just make sure that I get everything right that I know I'm supposed to say. Okay, so we still have got some Childeberg 1 beer koozies left over, okay? Here's the deal, listeners. And this goes for anybody. Friends Against Government podcast friendsagainstgovernment@gmail.com. I'll put it in the description as well. Once you go and either on iTunes would be preferable, but anywhere you can leave a review, we need a 5-star review. And we need you to give us, just lambast us in the comments. Just, these guys suck, they're terrible, but give us the 5 stars, because that's what really matters. Leave that review, take a picture of it, and email us to friendsagainstgovernment@gmail.com for proof of it. And you'll receive, until they run out, so, you know, just stock is limited. Post that review, send us the picture of it. And you'll get a beer koozie. You will probably need to surrender your address to somebody, obviously. We will have more for you on that. But for now, get your pictures together, email them into the podcast. I will be watching and making sure everybody who emails it to me gets proper credit. Find some way as well to link us to where you're at, maybe on Twitter, however you want to do it. And that's cool. But we need that 5 stars and a terrible review. And maybe you'll get a beer koozie. Who knows?
All right, I need to figure out how to do this on desktop, because insider trading here. This is not public yet.
No, that's true. You're guaranteed a koozie.
You are guaranteed a koozie as long as you leave that review. You could probably print screen a picture of it and send it over.
Or we could probably just send you a koozie anyway.
Koozie. Wait, is Childeberg happening next year?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, dude. Are you thinking about coming down?
I'm thinking about coming down.
Oh, yeah. Come down, dude. Everybody's coming down. Childeberg 2 is going to probably... I mean, Childeberg 2 has to be twice as big as last year. People are talking about
mathematically,
it.
Mathematically, that seems reasonable.
It seems like it. It seems like it. Yeah. So, yeah.
And I put it in my calculator. That's the only way.
That's the only number that I can get. Childeberg 2 is going to be twice as big as Childeberg 1.
Right. So, here's Jake's message. I told Carr, but he might forget. Offer your listeners Childeberg 1 koozies if they post a review on their podcatcher for Fagcast and email or DM a screenshot. Do not DM it to me. I do not want DMs proving that you did this. Send the email, please. I'm not going to look through my DMs. Hey, look, I gave a review. Thank you. That's going to give me like a heart attack if I have to look in several different places. So send it in, friendsagainstgovernment@gmail.com.
I'm there.
Cool. All right. Well, if that's all we got, until next week, guys, keep 2 hands on the wheel.
Ha-ha!
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. This was a really, really fun episode. And another thank you again to Carr and Bird for having me on the show. And don't forget to follow them. They are at Friends Against Government or at Fagcast, I believe, is the Twitter tag. Let me confirm that just to make sure. Let's go to twitter.com. We're looking for Carr Campit and Bird here at Birdicus at Fagcast, all caps, FAGCAST. So don't forget to follow them and check out their show if you are a friend against government just like us. And we will catch you guys on the next show. This has been the Crypto Economy with Guy Swan, and I am signing off until next time. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy and subscribe to the show. This is where you learn all about the new economy being built, where we're going to get back our privacy, our sovereignty, and it will take us into a crazy, crazy future. And this is where you're going to hear and learn and read all about it. Until next time, take it easy, guys.